Welcome to the Client Experience Collaborative Podcast. This collaborative combines Client Savvy's deep industry knowledge of CX and professional services firms and 16 years of client feedback gathering and analysis with CX Pilot's 2 decades of embedding CX into unique business-to-business cultures. This bi-weekly podcast is for firm executives and CX leaders looking for tips, secrets, ideas, and resources from two of the CX industry's most innovative pioneers. To access this community and stay informed, go to clientexperience.com and join the mailing list today. And now, here is our host, Blake Godwin.
Hello, and welcome back to the Client Experience Collaborative Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about cross-organizational benefits and stories of CX and EX inside of professional services firms, and then more importantly, how to infuse CX and EX into the firm and its different divisions. Really excited about this today. Gentlemen, Stephen Keith and Ryan Saddam, both on the call again today with us. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Doing good. Very well, Blake. Thank you.
Good. So I love this topic. I think a lot of people in professional services are not aware of how many divisions are touched and benefit by implementing and formalizing client and employee experience. You guys resonate with that at all?
Yeah. I mean, that the CX Pilot's whole soapbox is trying to help people understand that it has far-reaching impacts if you're doing it correctly. And that everybody ought to be impacted by this positively. So, yes.
Yeah, I think there's a flawed perception out there that CX is something marketing does. And a lot of that might be because we've seen a lot of marketers and business development people take lead in this because they see clearly how it helps them. But we've seen this impact quality, operations, leadership development, IT, accounting. It really touches every aspect of the business.
Absolutely. And for all the listeners today, you know, if you're gung-ho and sold on implementing CX as a differentiator inside of your firm, today's going to be a really great topic for you. It's the best way to understand where the return on investment is going to drive the decision to say yes for formalizing CX inside of your firm. So many people, as I said, you know, they think CX and EX provides benefits to one or two divisions within the firm. However, we just mentioned again, there is a tremendous cross-organizational benefit to all divisions. So Stephen, I want to start with you. Can you tell us some surprising benefits or stories that you've seen or heard for a division that maybe someone doesn't think benefits from operationalizing CX? And then Ryan, we'll follow up with you.
I think to me, we've talked about this, guys, like 3 or 4 podcasts ago, and that's, you know, if you start out in knowing that the firm wants to become more experience led and you want to explore like what are the benefits and advantages of doing that, one of the things that you really ought to do is start out with looking at your value drivers, like what's going to drive the value. And in that, you really should have basically a representative from almost every part of the firm in there. What's really interesting is when you get cross divisional attendance in that kind of value driver meeting, when you're talking, you have HR in there, like Ryan said earlier, you know, IT, accounting and finance, R&D, leadership, sales, business development people, and even like the proposal writers and the, you know, the bidding people. When they're in there and you start talking about process and you start talking about, you know, operational efficiencies, you know, if those are some of the drivers that you want to aim for, all of a sudden you get all these different people from like the edges of the firm kind of sitting forward, like saying, hey, wait a minute, that, you know, we have the opportunity to positively impact that. And the answer is yes. If that's, you know, if those are the value drivers that you want to go after. A really good example is in, research and development, you know, there are some people, you know, some firms that we work with are, you know, they have people who are, they're constantly looking at how do you, how can we increase the, you know, the quality of the service, or how can we inject, you know, three-dimensional technology into more of our service, like whatever it is. The thing that surprises almost every single client that we work with is when we say, hey, when we're mapping out some of these more intricate journeys, you have the opportunity to demonstrate how you drive deeper, more engaging experiences in using some of these technologies. And you can then, you know, liaise or partner with marketing and start surface some of those insights and start marketing some of those differentiators about how you use three-dimensional technology or, you know, whatever that thing is. That surprises people because Blake, as you set this up, you know, a lot of times, a lot of firms think that CX is just, you know, it's just through the pinhole. It's just collecting feedback, or it's just, you know, trying to drive an NPS score up, which we all know is not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of want to maybe ask the question a little bit differently, Ryan, for you. What part of the business, again, have you seen as a surprising division of the business that has impacted? And do you have a story to tell with that?
Yeah, there's so many to choose from. One of my favorites, you know, I love when people get personally invested all of a sudden. And I heard from a IT manager at a smaller firm. IT is so often just treated as a cost center, make sure the lights are on and, you know, the computers work kind of person. And as the firm really started leaning in on client experience, they found a lot of gaps in their client experience were, you know, digital interfaces of different shapes. And all of a sudden, this IT manager who, you know, always felt like he was, you know, the redheaded stepchild and always had to scrap for you know, bits of funding and could never get attention from leadership. All of a sudden, this IT manager got deeply pulled in into some very important strategy in the business because the firm realized they had to start looking at technology as an enabler, not as a cost center. And no longer was parity the goal with technology. The goal of technology became giving them an operational and experiential advantage. That IT manager within 6 months went from feeling left out to being offered the opportunity to buy into the firm as a partner and had a actual seat at the leadership table. You know, changed his career. It was really kind of a neat process to see and be a part of as this IT manager, you know, became a real leader and got to contribute in a meaningful way that one, made an impact to the business, two, made an impact to the clients, but three, made an impact to his heart and his career. And those are fun stories.
Yeah, I really like that story. One of the ones that come to the front of my mind is a firm that we've spoken with, about 150 people, and it's the accounts receivable portion of the business, right? Like, how does client experience affect the day-to-day lives of someone in accounts receivable? It's fascinating. I know, Stephen, you said client experience is not collecting feedback by itself, and it certainly isn't, but there was a firm that started collecting feedback, and AR in a very short amount of time saw a reduction in days overdue by 19 days. How does that affect scale? How does that affect the day-to-day of the accounting department? What else are they able to do? Are they able to be more progressive in their thinking and develop accounting methods? Are they able to design the way that they invoice better by reducing the amount of time that they have to spend chasing down dollars? And, you know, I start thinking about all the different stories that I know, and accounts receivable is certainly, and accounting is not one of the divisions of a business that I really saw being beneficial. And so it came to mind for me just what an interesting story that was to see their accounts receivable days, you know, shortened by 19. I mean, that's incredible to me.
And a lot of people don't realize the impact something like a cash flow has on a business. I mean, we all kind of say we understand, but a lot of leaders in professional services didn't go to business school and you know, you put a number out there like, collections shortened by 19 days. What that means is you have the cash 19 days sooner to hire that next person.
Right.
And when that money is there 19 days earlier, and so you can bring resources in more quickly to staff changing workloads, that means that's 19 days you're not burning out your other staff with extra work because you haven't brought that person in yet. A lot of these things really have strong trickle-down impacts that are quite noticeable, even if you don't think about them up front.
Well, no kidding. And think about not only being able to hire the next person or reducing burnout, think about the number of firms, guys, that we were speaking to 6 months ago who were having to turn away work because they either couldn't hire fast enough or they couldn't find the right talent. I mean, one extra job, it could mean $100,000, $1 million added to the bottom line. And so getting that money in faster can make a huge difference in scale.
I have a really funny, quick anecdotal story. We were asked by a medium-sized accounting firm to help them create the invitation for, you know, the right cohort in the room to do this outcome-oriented journey mapping. And when we sent over the list of people that we think needed to be involved, you know, there were three roles on that list where they immediately pushed back. They're like, no way. Like, we can't see that. One of them was accounts receivable. One of them was the CFO. And the other one was the head of recruiting. And they say, okay, we can see the head of recruiting, but what the hell do you need the CFO and the A&R person in here in journey mapping for? And that was a really fun exchange because, you know, after we explained what you just laid out, both you, Blake and Ryan, they're like, oh yeah, we could see that. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of great stories like this in every division of the organization. I feel like we could talk about this for days, which is why this is, you know, part one of a two-phase series. So everyone does think it's about marketing business development, right? I mean, everyone that we talk to, it typically in their minds is going to start with marketing and business development. So they have so many benefits when they implement CX and EX. Can you give some stats and tell a story pertaining to how marketing and BD benefits? Ryan, we'll start with you.
Great. Well, I'll do both. I'll share a story and I'll share some stats. And I'll start with the story because I got a fun little one. And this was a firm, and one of the first things they did on their CX journey was put feedback and measurement in place just to get a baseline. And the very first week, they started listening to their clients. A client came back and said, you know, it'd be really nice to have more of a presence on site from your project manager. The client happened to be like three blocks down, this was up in Chicago. Client was three blocks down in a different building. So the project manager just started stopping by twice a week on the way to the office to walk in and say hi. And within 6 months, they had increased the revenue on that account by $300,000. Now, you talk about an impact to marketing and business development. The clients will tell you when and where they need more help and what they're looking for. And if you just get your technical staff showing up and being there, a lot of times the work will just show up. And that means business development can now go focus on some of the harder things, like identifying net new clients instead of just trying to grow a share of wallet with the existing client base. So a client experience can be really helpful at equipping and empowering the doers who sometimes sell to be more sellers and free up more of that BD time elsewhere.
Ryan, I hate to interrupt, but being from Chicago, you said that was in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. Yeah, the 300,000. Yeah, it fell off a truck. It's like Chicago politics.
Yeah. It was a public works agency. So I don't know if the guy was bringing donuts or what, but it certainly worked. And all of a sudden there was just a lot more work coming in the door simply by stopping by a couple times a week. I mean,
oh, there were definitely donuts.
But then that does transcend into other places. You know, we've heard time and time again about how, by really understanding who you are and what value you provide, by designing your value proposition through the lens of the client, by presenting that value proposition in your marketing, in your relationship building, in your proposals and pursuits, firms are chasing a lot less work, and the work that they're chasing, they've designed themselves to win. And so their proposal win rates are going up. We're consistently hearing firms going from 30% win rates to 50% win rates, which if your win rates are going up, you don't have to chase as much work, which then frees up business development to do other more strategic things. One firm, I think Tim said on our last podcast, they pursued 2/3 as much work and increased their backlog 30%. You know, that's huge. And that's that much less time producing proposals, which means you have that much more time to invest in relationships. And that's really where professional services grows.
You talked about pursuing less work, Ryan. God, there's so many firms that I can think of. One firm we know who's about 3,500 employees when we started working with them had about 3,000 clients, and it was really fast. Started chatting that they wanted to fire half their clients, right? And so we had to dig a little bit into it. What do you mean? What do you mean by that? And they said, well, we really want to understand our ideal client profiles. We want to know who our happiest clients are that are the most profitable. And we don't want to let go of any of our staff. In fact, we want to continue to grow our staff. We just want to increase our share of wallet with those top, 1,500 clients and grow on profitability, work with happier clients that then in turn create happier employees, right? And 18 months later, not only did they begin working more with their top 1,000 clients, but essentially stopped working with the rest of them, and in 18 months increased their bottom line by $35 million and reduced marketing costs by 300%. I mean, how do you not see that and not head towards the light?
I love that, Blake, but do you ever get people who find those types of stats like less than credible? I mean, I live it, and so do you. We know it's true, but every time I say stuff like that, I always notice like the people on the other side of the table, or the other side of the Zoom conference, say, "Where'd you get that number?"
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
until they live it, until you like work with them and you like sort of prove, and it wasn't 300, it was like 360% or, something crazy. But people largely don't believe some of these figures, and it's crazy because these are real, real lived outcomes.
Yeah. And a lot of them are telling the story themselves at conferences, at places, I hear the skepticism all the time.
Blake, I'd love to share an anecdote towards what Steven just said. It's another one of those surprise places where CX brought some real value. I worked with about a 250-person engineering firm, they were going through some of the early phases of CX. And one of the first exercises we helped them through was learning how to build out an empathetic approach to a client when developing a relationship or developing a project. So the purpose of the exercise was to coach a team of their seller doers on how to really interview a client to find out what their pains were and how to help them. So we brought in their lead receptionist. They have four receptionists, one in each of their four offices, brought in their lead receptionist just to act as the pretend client. And she's a very strategic a receptionist. She does reception and also personal assistant for the president. So she's really engaged at that executive level. And the team just started asking her questions about what she thought one of the top problems was. She goes, well, I get about 70 phone calls a day from clients asking for a project manager that I have to send a voicemail. And I think that's terrible. And I was like, oh, okay. So as I started digging in to really understand, you know, okay, what does that really mean? What do we do about it? By the time they started doing some of the math, okay, well, if every time a client calls and they don't talk to the project manager, what if it was a client calling to give the project manager another project? Well, maybe they call another vendor. What if every time they call, they go to voicemail, they start thinking we're too busy, so that they start sending more work to one of our competitors? And even if you just take, you know, a piece here and a piece there and a piece there, but you multiply it across how big the organization was, they found out that the way they're answering the phones, their numbers was costing them $940,000 a year in lost profit. And the output of this a two-hour session was, we had no idea that something as simple as how we answer the phones could be so impactful to our client experience and to our business. It was fascinating. And all of a sudden, though it was nowhere on their strategic plan, they started investing in changing how they managed telephony because they realized they were losing a lot of opportunities because they weren't being perceived as available by their clients. So it's really interesting how many places, if you just look, there's a million here, there's a million there. There's so much value to be captured with client experience in the most absurd and surprising places.
Really, there really is. Stephen, let me ask you a question before I move on to my next actual question that I want to ask you. With the skepticism that you hear in the market, right, with the stats that are publicized, not by us, by third-party research organizations, WIDE, PS&J, right, the statistical benefits that are happening to firms who are implementing CX and EX in their firms, What would you say to them? What do you have to say to them for those that are skeptical and are going to and have been and are going to continue doing things the same way they have for 100 years?
I think there's so many. Like one of the things that we say, how about I just share? There's a couple things that are like that where I notice that eyes pop out of sockets when we say that industry as a whole, 81% of marketers, you know, people who are currently principally in charge of CX, 81% of them plan to compete on CX. So what that means, you know, when you translate that, like what it means is essentially all your competitors are going to dump a crap ton of investment on CX. So what does that mean? Like, imagine a scenario where three of your nearest competitors are all going to start investing in CX. What does that mean to you? Imagine the scenarios. And then they're like, oh shit. I mean, that has really real implications. And then we say, okay, CX-led businesses tend to get three times the return on their marketing investments. So what does that mean? So if you could imagine if you're spending, you know, X amount on CX and you're doing the like full scale CX program, you're going to get a 3X return on that as opposed to someone who might just be doing, you know, one simple element of CX or just sort of dipping their toe in. That makes people sit up and say, well, what does it mean to do a broader scale CX program? The other thing that freaks people out, and this has a lot to do with, you know, what you guys at Client Savvy do specifically, but one of the things that we learned from, you know, listening to Esteban Kolsky, who's he's been a CX visionary for the last decade, 1 in 26 clients complain. The other 25 say nothing. Which makes you like makes people wonder, is it the, you know, is the absence of negative feedback the sign of satisfaction? Or is it the, you know, is, or is the lack of feedback, are, you know, 25 out of 26 people not say anything, is that a sign of appeasement?
Well, I think you look statistically right, 93% of people roughly are non-confrontational, which is why so many people don't say anything. And, you know, I know language is language to me, when you talk about feedback and client experience and creating a culture inside of your organization is important. And I don't think there's any negative feedback. I think you're blessed to be able to get feedback at all, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
And with all the studies that are out there, I mean, you can read all over the internet. There's hundreds of pages on it. There's about a 400% increase in loyalty when something goes wrong between you and your client and you fix it, than if nothing ever goes wrong between the two of you ever, which is fascinating to me. So in the world of professional services, there's a whole lot of opportunity, right? I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out there. You want to get that challenging feedback and fix it.
Yeah. And in fact, there are some companies that we're aware of that actually they orchestrate deliberate challenges into the relationships so that they have the recovery event, because they know it's going to lead to a 400% spike in loyalty.
Yeah. What, I mean, that's progressive thinking, right? I mean, that's progressive thinking. Bravo to that firm. You know, I think it's important to know, I don't know if it's people are skeptical on the numbers, but I also want to make everyone aware that this is not a cakewalk. You got to put in some work. The reality is, you want to be different, you got to do something different. And it's hard work. It's hard work accomplishing some of the goals and accomplishing some of the outcomes that we've told the stories about, you know, here today. And I think that's really important for everybody to know. Talk to me a little bit about the integration opportunities between CX and marketing. I'd love to hear about that a little bit more. Are firms smart to think about integrating these two areas and why?
We're doing a massive CX and marketing integration right now. We're like month four into this integration, and the announcement just went out to all the employees that basically, you know, if you're in marketing, you're going to be impacted. If you're in CX, you're going to be impacted. And it went out from the CEO, and I've been having calls with all of the, you know, all of the leaders of these groups for the last 2 weeks. And what's amazing out of this is like people's like initially they're super scared. Like, am I going to lose my job? How is this going to impact my, you know, all of my direct reports and all that stuff? Tons of fear until it becomes clear that this is an enormous opportunity. And here's why it's such an opportunity and why professional services firms really ought to think about the sort of the deliberate integration of CX and marketing. There's two things that I want you to think about if you're a leader in a CX, you know, a leader in a firm who's doing any degree of CX. First, you want to increase your curiosity about your prospects and your clients. That's the number one thing. Anything you can do to increase your curiosity and your ability to satisfy that curiosity about them. Two, the second most important thing is you then have to do something with that information. So you're converting your curiosity and information gained from your prospects and your customers into some sort of actionable input that affects every, you know, every area of the firm. To that extent, if those are the two most important levers in the business with respect to marketing and CX, it makes no sense to separate them as teams anymore, because essentially what you're doing is you're building a smarter and more strategic institutional curiosity machine, you know, whether it's by through collecting feedback or it's training or whatever it is. You're building something that's, you know, purpose driven to go out and find information that you can then convert into better marketing, better communications, better support and services, better, you know, business development, better, you know, everything all the way down the line. What we're learning from doing this integration is that every single part of the firm is being positively impacted by combining these things and then dramatically simplifying what the objectives are. Again, the first one, you know, increase your curiosity, collect more better information about prospects and customers. Two, do something more strategic with that information once you've gathered it.
That's great, man. Thank you so much for that. So I want to transition to one more division here. My favorite thing, I'm an operations guy, right? So I really love how CX, EX impacts operations. Probably my favorite. You know, it increases efficiencies, reduce wasted effort, you know, it just does a ton of different things. What else can you tell us about operations, Ryan, and the benefits CX and EX brings to the table?
Well, first I started laughing while I was on mute here while Stephen was sharing his piece, because it made me think, you know, Stephen said, you gather all these insights and you got to do something about it. And it reminds me of a early call I had with a CEO as they were exploring this, and in front of his entire leadership team, there are about half a dozen of them on the call. And towards the end of the call, the CEO goes, well, this all sounds great, but the problem is if we learn all this stuff about our clients, we're going to have to do something.
No, not really. You don't really have to.
You know, he wasn't saying it sarcastically. He was putting it on the table as a legitimate, if we learn about our clients in new ways, we're going to have to change. And that's scary and hard. You know, once I picked my jaw up off the floor, because I can't imagine a effective leader not realizing that the purpose of learning is in order to change and get a competitive advantage, we really started digging into their processes and project delivery and service delivery and staffing. And, you know, boy, all right. So what we're doing here is, one, talking about identifying problems with clients before they escalate. So how much time are you spending right now putting out fires? And like every leader in the room was like, oh God, that's all I do is put out fires all day. I'm like, all right. Well, operationally, if you're finding out, you know, if your frontline staff are finding out problems before they escalate and they're dealing with them, what does that do for you? And people started getting really excited about what they could do as leaders, not putting out fires all the time. Well, then if we start figuring out what's causing those fires, we really start, you know, mapping out the interactions and understanding the journey that your clients are taking, and we pinpoint where the problems are happening. This is, you know, process and operation stuff. Do you think we can redesign those interactions to avoid the problems from happening? Oh, so first, let's get our frontline staff finding problems before they escalate so that they're dealing with them. And then me as leaders, in the free time that I get back, I can start thinking about how to avoid problems and you know, really start designing the business that we really want to have in the first place. And that just got them really excited about, you know, it's not just more work to do. It's taking work that they hate doing right now off of their plate and letting them focus in operationally on the smart strategic stuff that really helps them build a better business. You know, we're talking about professional services firms. These are usually very closely held organizations, partnerships, maybe they're ESOPs. We all benefit as leaders when our businesses grow and thrive and are more efficient. So from that operational perspective, less time putting out fires, more time delivering value to clients. It's great for the shareholders as well. So that was just a fun anecdote that came to mind as Stephen talked about applying what you learn about clients.
Yep. I love it.
Anything else you guys want to add about how operations benefits from CX and EX? I really think that there's a ton that we can chat about.
Well, one of the things that I find to be really kind of eye-opening for operations leaders inside of these firms is when they're involved in interaction design, like every once in a while we're you know, we're involved in a, in the process of service blueprinting. So the objective is to go through and help people understand, you know, if we thoroughly map out the interactions that people have, like where are the opportunities to improve services. So this is a funny story. One of the operations guys was in there, he's tabulating, you know, as we were doing this service blueprinting, the team was coming up with all these new things. And the guy's like, okay, everybody, sobriety check. You guys have just come up with 19 new initiatives. And he was so sour about that because he knew that he was going to have to, you know, be in charge of figuring out like, how do we handle the 19 net new initiatives that just sort of organically sprung up like a fungus as a result of doing the service blueprinting. And what we did was we reversed the challenge. We said, how can we consolidate all of the things that we've just come up with into like basically one initiative, and, you know, take a subtractive mindset to this as opposed to an additive mindset. And, you know, as we started to consolidate all this stuff down into, you know, into one thing, his eyes started getting a little bit bigger, and he's like, okay, I can see this. And he started to get a little bit more excited. All this to say, you know, the story behind this is it can be really discouraging if you are in charge of operations to see other people in the firm kind of start stacking a whole bunch of new stuff on your docket. But, you know, there are really clever and strategic ways to make it so that it's not, you know, you're not drowning operations people with all the, you know, all of these great opportunities to improve the service. You can actually be doing, you know, consolidating these things so that you're providing better overall experience to the client. You're providing better overall experience to the employees, and you're not completely submerging. I know that there's, you know, one of our clients who listens to these podcasts, who's listening, and and he knows exactly who he is right now.
I felt like you were talking about me, Stephen. You know, today we've talked about accounts receivable, accounting, a lot about marketing, business development, a little bit about operations. I'm excited about speaking with you guys in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about HR, finance, project management, the C-suite, probably a little bit more about operations. I'm really digging this cross-organizational benefit conversation and how we can infuse CX and EX into those different divisions and roles in an organization. For you listeners, please go to clientexperience.com or your favorite podcast app and submit your questions to the Client Experience Collaborative podcast. We will be back on in 2 weeks. We look forward to discussing the other cross-organizational benefits to professional services firms who do operationalize and implement client experience as their formalized business discipline. Steve and Ryan, thank you so much for your time today, and look forward to talking to you in a few weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. See you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Client Experience Collaborative podcast. Please tell your friends and colleagues to subscribe on their favorite podcast app and visit us at clientexperience.com. Please also send us your feedback and questions for the next episode on our website. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode.